can the United States do to force the Burmese military to reverse their actions? It's going to be a difficult question.
Protests continue in Myanmar. It's Tuesday, February 9th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Afghan women get the word out, impeachment politics, farmers get the COVID vaccine, clean diesel, films about women by women. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Tens of thousands of people in Myanmar continue to take to the streets to protest a military coup and call for the release of the country's democratically elected leader, Aung San Suu Kyi. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more.
Large protests took place in cities like Yangon, Naypyidaw, and Mandalay in the wake of last week's military coup. Aung San Main is a protest leader.
A military coup is the violation of our democracy and human rights. It also insults the will of the people. That's why we are against the military coup. It's important to honor the election result. That's why we come here staging protests.
The protests follow a week in which the military claimed election fraud, arrested members of the government elected in November, and cut off access to the internet. Internet service was reported to have been restored Sunday. Protesters showing the three-fingered salute, a symbol against the coup, demanded the release of de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi. They wore red in solidarity with Aung San Suu Kyi's National League for Democracy Party, or NLD. The military coup has been condemned by U.S. President Joe Biden and other world leaders who have called for the elected government to be restored to power. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
The coup caught the Biden administration off guard. Myanmar was not at the top of his priorities as the new president took office, but quickly moved up last week. Yun Sun, senior fellow and co-director of the East Asia Program and director of the China Program at the Stimson Center, spoke with VOA's Adriana Zhang about possible U.S. action.
I think the most fundamental challenge is that, well, Biden will have to have a response, and that response needs to be an effective one. But given how determined the Burmese military is pursuing this coup, I doubt that anything will significantly change the Burmese military's calculation, because they were determined to stage the coup, they started the coup, and they apparently have anticipated the impact and the reaction from the international community, but they still went ahead. So what can the United States do to force the Burmese military to reverse their actions is going to be an important question, but also a difficult question. And on a different level, if we look at Biden's presidency and Biden's priority, I would say that before the coup, Myanmar is not a priority. Then Myanmar is probably not even the top 10 priority coming to the issue to Biden's foreign policy. Maybe in Asia, potentially, but Asia also has a lot of other glaring issues that demand Biden's attention. So I would say that for this coup to happen at this time, basically within 2 weeks of Biden's inauguration, it really poses a huge question to the Biden Asia team as for what Biden's effective response will be. And remember, there's also the Congress, because the Congress is not going to tolerate a coup in Myanmar after 10 years of democratic process or democratization process. So what we're likely to see is that there will be mounting pressure from the Congress for the Biden administration to take decisive but also harsh measures to punish the military government, to punish the Burmese military for their actions. So, but then there's also the counter argument that if you reimpose all the sanctions that you can reimpose, then the military government will have nothing more to lose. Then you will lose the leverage to force them to change their calculations. So these are really hard questions, because the issue of sanction on Myanmar has been debated by many for decades, and I don't think there's going to be an easy and quick answer to this question.
what kind of actions do you think the U.S. will take? Because in the past, U.S. sanctioned the Myanmar military chief for what happened to Rohingya Muslims. So do you think the U.S. will impose more sanctions?
Well, the question is, impose more sanctions on whom? The Rohingya-related sanction was targeted at Burmese military. But now, if the military has already taken over the country, do you sanction the whole country, right? So we know that the military is now in charge, and the Burmese are probably exporting, they're having trade with the United States. They're exporting, for example, agricultural products or gem or the Burmese jade or the Burmese gem products. And now we know that the military is in charge, and the revenue will be going to the military government. Do we still allow those trades to happen? Another industry that has been developing in Myanmar in the past 10 years is textile and garment industry. And that hires a lot of Burmese people. But now we know that the military is in charge and the military will be harvesting the revenue and profits from those industries. Do we still accept Burmese garment and textile to come into American market? If we don't, which makes sense, that we want to punish the military, but at the same time, if we don't, we're also punishing Burmese people who are not responsible for this coup. So this gets into the morality question of sanctions, that are we punishing the government or are we punishing the people at the same time as well? And which one is more important?
Yun Sun, Senior Fellow and Co-Director of the East Asia Program and Director of the China Program at the Stimson Center in Washington. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. At least 18 dead in northern India after Himalayan glacier burst. China charges Chinese-Australian journalist with supplying state secrets. Thousands protest nationwide against Myanmar junta for third day. Australians to receive vaccination certificates in mass inoculation program. Asian markets surge as hopes rise on passage of massive U.S. economic stimulus bill. There's expanded coverage of these stories and a whole lot more when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia and our website at voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson. A weekly newspaper run by a team of female journalists is thriving in northern Afghanistan despite threats against journalists in parts of the country. Gurahim Niazman from VOA's Afghan service has more in the report, narrated by Bejan Hamdard.
In Mazar-e-Sharif, the capital of Balkh province in Afghanistan's north, the weekly Khurshid Balkh, or Balkh's Sun, covers local and regional news. The outlet run by all women shows they can work freely and without assistance, says founder and managing editor Neda Azizi.
I set up this weekly newspaper using my own money and continue to do so at personal expense. If there are any advertisements, that helps me with some of the costs.
Azizi works with two other female journalists. Together, they shatter cultural stereotypes of what a woman's role should be and still report despite a spike in attacks against media. 2020 saw a 26% rise in violence against members of the media, says the Afghan Journalist Safety Committee. The paper is growing more popularity, although Azizi says it can be hard to get people to pay for it.
I saw three or four places where they wanted to receive the weekly on a regular basis, but when we mentioned the financial cost, they did not want to buy the weekly. People want to read, but don't want to pay to read.
Good opportunities exist for women in this province, says Mathil Rahman Karimi, the province's director of cultural and information.
Balkh is one of the provinces where women have the opportunity to work in various fields, especially in media, where most of the employees of the public and private media organizations are women.
In Balkh, the province has one weekly newspaper and three radio stations run by female journalists. The number of females working in TV and radio is also relatively high. Rights activists say this helps elevate the voices of all women in the region.
What women face, what women go through, and the violence they face, men don't. That is why it is crucial for women to play an important and valuable role in media.
Despite security threats and cultural challenges, the journalists at Bahsan say they will continue to report on important and underreported issues. For Gulrahim Niazman in Mazar-e-Sharif, Afghanistan, Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
Happening now in Asia, a chartered flight carrying the first shipment of doses of China's Sinopharm COVID-19 vaccine arrived in Cambodia. The shipment was personally received by Prime Minister Hun Sen at the Phnom Penh International Airport. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us on another very busy week here at VOA Asia. Democrats and Republicans in the United States are laying out their strategies ahead of the start of the second impeachment trial of Donald Trump. VOA Steve Reddish explains what is behind the arguments for both sides.
Last month's attack on the U.S. Capitol prompted the House of Representatives, led by Democrats with the support of 10 Republicans, to impeach then-President Donald Trump for an unprecedented second time. House Democrats, who will prosecute the case before the jury of U.S. senators, say Trump incited the attack that killed 5 people, including a Capitol Police officer. And they will use Trump's own words and video from the riot to try to sway the jury.
In terms of the strategy that the Democratic Party is using, which is to say, you know, this guy is a threat. He is still a threat. He is currently a threat. He was a threat. The insurrection is a result of his violent incitement rhetoric.
Jennifer Murcia is a professor of American political rhetoric at Texas A&M University.
So if they can activate people's memories of the event and they can, sort of remind them of the fear that they felt and reactivate that fight or flight response, they might find that they're able to persuade, you know, even beyond the partisanship.
With the 100-member Senate evenly split, Democrats need 17 Republicans to join them to vote to convict former President Trump. But the word former is at the crux of the Republican strategy.
If the accused is no longer president, where is the constitutional power to impeach him? Private citizens don't get impeached. Impeachment is for removal from office. And the accused here has already left office.
Republicans lost a vote on the trial's constitutionality, but the 55-45 vote leaves Democrats well shy of the 67 votes needed.
I think they really are just trying to keep this at the level of procedure. This is simply a procedural question at this point. We're not going to relitigate, you know, this question of violence and the insurrection and whether Trump's at fault or not.
And Murcia says social media's silencing of Trump may work against the Democrats' strategy.
They really will be trying to use fear appeal, you know, and make the argument about safety and that he's a clear and present danger. And I think the fact that he's been deplatformed really actually hurts that argument, because if he was still online, he would still be making all of those same arguments. He would still be that clear and present danger.
House Democrats formally requested that Trump testify at his impeachment trial set to start Tuesday. When asked if he will testify, lawyers for the former president said no. Steve Reddish, VOA News, Washington.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to find them easily. With VOA Asia, you can also follow radio program hosts VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. Indonesia's National Agency of Drug and Food Control approved the use of China's Sinovac Biotech COVID-19 vaccine for its elderly population. At a press conference, the agency announced it had issued an emergency use authorization for the vaccine. You'll find this and many more stories on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, hundreds of immigrants have lined up to become some of the first U.S. farm workers to receive COVID-19 shots, that during a vaccination event in Riverside County, California. We hear more with VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo.
For the first time, the workers took some time off from picking produce at Tudor Ranch in the western U.S. state of California to get vaccinated. Executive Director George Tudor says farm workers and their well-being are critical to the United States.
I think it's evident. You look in your refrigerator, you go to the grocery store, everybody needs food, and it comes from someplace, and it comes from these fields, and it comes from these people's hard work.
A sentiment echoed by Riverside County Public Health Director Kimberly Sarwatari.
We know that this is an essential workforce. We know that they are critical to the food supply chain across the country, so we want to make sure that they're protected.
But debunking the myths about the COVID-19 vaccine has been an important component of the vaccination effort, says Luz Gallegos, executive director at TODEC, a farm worker advocacy group.
And we knew as an organization that it was going to be very difficult for our community to get a vaccine because they continued hearing myths. So we started 3 months ago with our community education, going to the fields, talking to the workers, letting them know what the vaccine was.
Farm worker Ezequiel Hernandez says at times he believes his health is not a consideration for most people. This effort has certainly changed that belief.
Something like that, you know, like somebody cares. No, no, sometimes you feel like, oh, nobody cares about me, but now we demonstrate somebody cares about our farmers, and it's nice.
Hernandez says he's happy to have received the vaccine and feels great.
That's fantastic, you know. Some people give free. Some people don't like it. Say maybe, you know, something happened, but I'm not. I'll be free. I'm okay.
As of Wednesday, California has over 3.1 million COVID-19 confirmed cases, resulting in at least 38,000 deaths, which constitutes a nearly 2% increase from the day prior, according to official state data. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia, North Korea marked the founding anniversary of the state's army with a floral tribute for the country's late leaders, with Pyongyang residents and military officers offering flowers to North Korean founder Kim Il-sung and its late leader Kim Jong-il. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, U.S. President Joe Biden is planning to bring what he calls a clean energy revolution to tackle climate change. The diesel industry, which had gone through its own revolution a decade ago to meet stricter environmental standards, has seen payoffs in adopting green fuel initiatives. Jinya Dilo has the story.
20 years ago, it was hard to imagine anything more harmful to the environment than a heavy-duty diesel truck emitting thick black smoke and pollutants.
I was in the trucking industry.
John Force, a successful race car driver on the American National Hot Rod Association drag racing circuit, was a truck driver in the 1960s. Nowadays, he loves reminiscing about his early years, but he also said he's glad that green diesel has become possible.
That's why you look in the cities around America, around the world. If they hadn't come up, you know, with product lines, you know, we're just killing our world that we live in. Our children in time are going to see a different era.
The push for cleaner diesel fuel came when the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency issued a mandate requiring all heavy-duty diesel trucks, beginning with those built starting in 2010, to reduce the emission of particulate matter and nitrogen oxides to near zero levels. At this facility in Southern California, Old World Industries manufactures Blue DEF, a commodity chemical used in agricultural products like fertilizer. It is also called diesel exhaust fluid and is essential in cleaning exhaust fumes. The technology behind this is called selective catalytic reduction, SCR, which injects Blue DEF into the exhaust stream of the diesel engine, converting nitrogen oxides into nitrogen and water, elements already in the air we breathe, allowing diesel vehicles to meet EPA regulations.
And some of the most polluted areas of the country, in Los Angeles, for example, the new generation of diesel trucks, the exhaust coming out of those trucks is actually cleaner than the air going in on some high pollution days.
The United States had more than 133 million diesel trucks on its roadways in 2012, the latest figures from the U.S. Transportation Department. In addition to aiding the environment, the technology has also led to an increase in fuel efficiency, with some diesel engines outfitted with SCR technology using 3 to 5% and in some cases up to 10% less fuel than older engines. That cost savings adds up for Class 8 vehicles, which at nearly 15,000 kilograms are the biggest on the road.
And when you're talking about heavy-duty equipment or Class 8 vehicles, 5 to 10% diesel savings is significant. Diesel is the greatest spend with regard to cost of operating one of these Class 8 rigs. And so that fuel efficiency gain that you're getting more than pays for the diesel exhaust fluid.
It takes about $13 worth of diesel exhaust fluid to treat 100 gallons of diesel. The diesel industry says they hope the fuel economy savings will, in the long run, justify the high initial investment cost for the technology. Jenny Adulo for VOA News, Los Angeles, California.
In the realm of film, the year 2021 seems to be the year of women. Dozens of acclaimed films and TV series by female directors pondering a woman's complex world are being released every week. Many are already Oscar contenders. Our own female critic, VOA's Penelope Palou, looks at a few examples.
Whisper something. Promising Young Woman, a dark comedy by director Emerald Fennell, follows 30-year-old Cassie, a once-promising medical student, on a mission.
Every week, I go to a club. I act like I'm too drunk to stand. And every week, a nice guy comes over to see if I'm okay.
You okay?
You are so pretty.
Pretending she's drunk and helpless, Cassie lures sexual predators and punishes them. It's payback for the death of her best friend, a victim of sexual assault who killed herself in college 10 years ago.
10 years later, and she's still living very much in the center of the trauma of what happened to her, but she's trying to find a way through it. And her way through it is to sort of one by one correct injustices.
Carey Mulligan says the film exudes a subtle horror.
It is not the extremes and the absolute worst violence that is experienced by women or the worst violations. It's the really subtle stuff that we've just become so used to in our society.
The film is receiving buzz for Oscar nominations.
Sophie Marciano.
Losing Alice by Israeli-American director Sigal Avin is a dark Israeli TV series on the power dynamic between two women. Alice, played by Israeli actress Ayelet Zurer, is a 40-something filmmaker juggling life as an artist, a mother, and a wife. Sophie, a young, intense scriptwriter and actress, is brimming with creativity and unbridled ambition. The two women meet on a train and start a partnership. Alice will direct Sophie's script, an erotic psychological thriller, with Alice's famous husband as the lead actor. Actress Ayelet Zurer says the sexual triangle runs more like an existential story about the price female artists are willing to pay for creativity and success, about the power play between older and younger women, and about women's unapologetic goal to have it all.
A woman has to do something awful to save her kids, or something questionable to save her kids or her marriage or something. It has to have a reason, otherwise we can't forgive her. But in this case, what Sigal has done is that she does it for herself, just because she wants to.
The series is streaming in over 100 countries.
Wow.
Oscar-winning actress and Grammy-winning singer Jennifer Hudson brings Aretha Franklin on the large screen in Lizzle Tommy's biopic called Respect. The film follows the rise of the Queen of Soul from her childhood as a choir singer to her international superstardom. Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
We invite you back for more VOA Asia at the same time tomorrow. In the meantime, you can follow us online. We're at Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.